Now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. Yes, indeed. Good Saturday morning to you. This is MC Blair, and I've got a brand new co-host, Michael Riley of Foodways. He was actually on the show here, and he's on the same page as the rest of us here at To Your Health, and so we brought him on. Hey, Michael.
Good morning, Mike. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
All right, great. Yeah, yeah. I'm really glad to be here. This is fantastic.
So, that is awesome. That is awesome. We're going to start off this morning, once we get through these technical things, and I'm going to play what we did at the City Market. I always like to play, you know, Saturday morning at the City Market. I interviewed a couple of people there, a kombucha guy, Jonathan Dickinson, and John Whiteside of Wolf Creek Farm, who's been a guest on this show. Oh, yeah. You know of John.
Oh, absolutely. And I've been to his farm. It's just really amazing.
Oh, it really is. And he's got a model by which we can actually 50 years from now achieve food security here in Charlottesville. Of course, there's a lot of hurdles to go, and he covers that as well. But here we go. We'll do a Saturday at the City Market.
MC Blair here, down at the City Market on this beautiful morning, Saturday morning at the City Market, about 60 degrees or so. Nice. I'm talking with Jonathan.
Jonathan Dickinson. How's it going?
Hey, good, Jonathan. And you, you're Mr. Kombucha, looks like.
Oh, you know, you gotta hock the booch. Lots of probiotics and B vitamins, you know, makes you feel good, super good for you.
And I will amend that. It was actually about 50 degrees, if you're keeping score.
And I had their carrot ginger, which is outstanding. Actually bought a whole glass of it. Little commerce. So why kombucha?
Oh, well, you know, kombucha is a fermented food. And we're not getting enough fermented foods in our diet these days. Since the advent of refrigeration and preservatives, people aren't getting their fermented foods. It used to be the way to eat vegetables, you know, through the winter. And now we just import it from Mexico or wherever. And yes. So our gut ecology is not what it ought to be.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Jonathan. So how long have you been doing this?
A few years now. My mom started making kombucha when I was like 7 years old, and that was my first sort of exposure to it. Yeah, came back around later in my life. Mountain Culture's been going since 2012.
So this is Mountain Culture.
Kombucha.
You were talking about going all the way up to Upperville and with your distribution.
Oh yeah, we run up to Upperville. Sure do. They got us on tap up there.
That's a way to go. I've seen that more and more. So where can people find your product right here in the Charlottesville, Albemarle area?
Oh, you can find us at Reed's, Whole Foods, Wegmans, Rebecca's. We are in the Blue Ridge Country Store, the Market Street Market, Revolutionary Soup. We're in about 100 different places.
Oh, that's really great. So, Jonathan, I understand that, and we've all heard that probiotics are great, and you know, there's all sorts of pills that say they're probiotic, and there's, you know, there's this and that, but why probiotics?
Well, you know, we've got more bacteria in our gut than we have cells in our body, so you want to make sure you get the right guys on your team. Good gut ecology is correlated with serotonin production. Maybe, you know, some of the reasons people aren't feeling as good these days, or maybe we don't need all these antidepressants. Could be that the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors aren't what we need. We just need the right gut ecology, and that is correlated with an increased serotonin production. It's also going to help you get more vitamins out of the food you eat. You know, it's really important. We are an ecosystem more fundamentally than we are an entity on a lot of levels.
That I so relate to. It's like the regenerative agriculture. It's the culture of agra, as opposed to just growing things. It's all one. We are all all, the matrix must remain unbroken and toxic free. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you want to have the right culture going on, for sure. Kombucha is, you know, started 1,000, 2,000 years ago in the Himalayas. It's been going for a long time now. It's interesting if you think about the East, people would typically, you know, both in ancient times, everyone realized that water was making you sick. And in the East, people realized that if they boiled water, it would not make them sick. And warm water is not very good by itself, so tea, you know, was sort of discovered, and that was the way people would hydrate and stay healthy. In the West, there's sort of this tradition of fermentation as a way of, you know, purifying water so it was safe to drink. So in kombucha, you've got a neat synthesis of East meets West. With fermented tea, you can't go wrong.
Man, that sums it up. Thank you, Jonathan.
You're welcome. It's nice talking with you.
And my pleasure.
Yeah.
I am now talking with John Whiteside of Wolf Creek Farm, my beef suppliers, this wonderful, wonderful farm out there doing the right thing. With John Whiteside of Wolf Creek Farm, it's got a great grass-fed beef operation, and we discussed a model by which everyone could have food access, something about a commitment, a community, or can you elaborate on that a little
bit? Yeah, I mean, if you look at a macro level, our economy is over two-thirds consumption and only one-third production. And so if you really want to change things, you change them through consumption, not through production. We know how to produce healthy, sustainable, natural food. What we don't know how to do as a community is to consume. And so we've built a whole infrastructure around getting cheap, available food, what's called food, ersatz food, through supermarkets and through the whole chain of industrial agriculture to the community. If we really want healthy, natural, sustainable farming and food in the community, we need to change our consumption patterns. And the biggest impediment to that for a lot of people is we've buried the true cost of food by subsidizing all of the industrial agriculture, so food is cheap. Whereas people used to spend a third of their gross income on food, they're now spending less than 5% on food. They used to spend less than 5% on medical. They're spending over 20% on medical. So what we've essentially done through industrial agriculture and the pharma industry is we've shifted spending from food to medical. If we want to shift it back, we both have to fix the medical so that you're not spending so much on medical, and we need to acclimate people to the fact that the most important thing they consume is food. The transition to that requires that people who have less means than other people are going to feel more pain in making that transition, and the way you help them through that is for the community as a whole to acknowledge that those with means maybe are paying a higher price for their food than those with lesser means. And at a local community level, you can make that work because people are very happy to help their neighbors. They're not happy to help subsidize a national program. So this can't work on a federal level through a federal government or even a state level through a state government. It has to work locally where people know their farmer, and the farmer has a set of customers, some of whom are more well-to-do than others, and they're perfectly willing to use their purchase of food to help make this transition. And so farmers could have a tiered pricing system where those with means are paying slightly more in order that those with less means are able to make the conversion from junk food over to real food.
Makes sense to me. So, John, that is definitely a solution to our spending habits, our consumption habits, but how do you get there from here?
Well, it's going to take a long time. We didn't get here overnight, and we got here with big forces coming out of World War II, the government and the petrochemical and pharmaceutical and fertilizer industry all getting together. To undo that, I don't think you can accomplish it with one big federal program and federal mandate. I think it's got to be done bit by bit on a local level. So the solution is for, on a local level, people who want to make this shift to basically seek out farmers who are farming correctly and support them through buying their product. And work with those farmers to say, look, I'm willing to pay a little bit more if you could also support a customer who's paying a little bit less. And literally bring to the farmer customers both of means and of less means, and help build that customer's that farmer's customer base with a mix of the local community. So leaders in the community first need to make the decision that they want to convert their own habits of buying to sustainable food locally from local farms. And then what they need to do is they need to next, once they've done that personally, is say, now I want to make a change in my community by helping people of lesser means, and I'll do that by subsidizing their purchases. So individually, you subsidize it, and you help both the consumer of less means, but you also help the farmer. And in terms of looking at farmers, I think the key is to look for younger people who are coming in. This is going to take a long time. So we old-timers that are in the farming business aren't going to be around to see it. We're here making the initial change, but to make this big change societally, we need young farmers to make this transition.
Makes sense. So, John, let's say there's a group of young folks, they have seen the farming in the local area and they really want to get involved, but they don't have a lot of credit, they're young, maybe some student debt going on. How do they get the land on which to farm?
Yeah, so the key ingredients are you have to want this lifestyle. You're not going to make a lot of money doing it, but it's a great life to be on a farm. The challenge today is that unless you've inherited the farm or unless you come to the farm with a lot of money, it's very difficult to get the land and to get all the equipment and infrastructure required to set up your farm. One of the solutions to that is for people who are very wealthy and own land but don't want a farm to get that farm to the people who are young that have the skill and the desire but don't have the capital. An organization that's working in this field is the Piedmont Environmental Council, and what they've done is said, let's tie the conservation easements that we're putting on large tracts of land to also enabling young farmers to come in and farm that land sustainably, so that the owner of the land is getting the benefit of having both the tax break on their land and knowing that they're doing the right thing for their local community in converting that land from fallow land or from industrial agriculture land to sustainable farmed land by family farmers, young people. And then the young people are introduced to them through the Piedmont Environmental Council as people that could come in and work that land, and as a stepping stone to potentially ultimately building a business that could afford to actually buy some of their own land, either from that owner, that landowner, or other land in the area.
That makes sense to me. I know UVA has a lot of land given to them by the Kluges. Maybe they could get involved.
Well, a lot of universities actually are starting farming operations to train the next generation of farmers in sustainable agriculture. So many of the environmental studies and sustainable living parts of universities, I know in New Haven, Yale University, similar with land grants from wealthy donors, have land that they want to convert their own internal consumption of food to sustainably grown food on the farm that's part of the university, and at the same time train the students in how that whole ecosystem works of the farming and the local community food.
Thank you, John. It's been very informative.
Oh, my pleasure.
Boy, I'll tell you, that John Whiteside, Michael, he has got a handle on it, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I agree, Mike. John, again, I have been up to his farm, and he really has just an incredible operation up there, and he is, I think, a true testament to what can be done out there and what we should be doing when it comes to raising livestock. And, they like to call themselves grass farmers, and that's something that we've talked about here,
right,
in developing soil fertility through the practice. practice of managed holistic grazing, and John is certainly a master at it. And so he's a great person to listen to, very erudite, and knows his stuff. He's a smart guy who was very successful in business before he went into farming, and he applies a lot of that knowledge and that discipline to sustainable agriculture. And he said some things there that will segue into our next discussion.
I think so, too. We have a dairy farmer who's going to be calling in about 10 minutes or so. You're listening to Your Health right here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and we will be back. And we are back. This is MC Blair. You're listening to Your Health with my co-host, Michael Riley of Foodways. That's an app that you can get. Check it out. It's a pretty good app. And we are here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, streaming live at, just use the numbers 947, and then WPVC.org. And you just click listen live, and that's how you can do it online, no matter where you are. Well, Michael, we have a dairy farmer going to be calling in a few minutes. So you've got some things about dairy and some important points to make. So throwing it over to you.
Yeah, thanks, MC. Absolutely. Well, we're going to expecting a call in here shortly from Ben Beichler, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. Ben and his wife, Kristen, run Creambrook Farm, and it is located out near Stanton. And we decided to talk about dairy here today because, we're always talking about the direction we want to go from this industrial food model to a more sustainable, regenerative model. And perhaps there's no greater example of that than the dairy industry in terms of covering the spectrums of what there is and what there could possibly be.
Right.
On the industrial side of things, we have this a model that is really damaging, not just to personal health, but to the planet and the environment, the ecology. And the way dairy is produced in this country is really something that is pretty scary. And so I think having somebody like Ben on here on this program can help show us what we can do. Their farm is really truly amazing. I've been out to visit. They raise their dairy cows on completely on pasture, 100% grass fed, which is absolutely remarkable and very, very much a unique model, not just in Virginia, but all over. Most dairy farmers, even those who are raising, have a local operation, will at some point introduce some grain or something, to help to supplement the feeding. But at Creambrook, they are, again, one of few dairies that are 100% grass-fed.
That is great.
Just really impressive. And they collaborate with Old Church Creamery, which is based down in Richmond. And Old Church actually has the creamery. So Creambrook sells or they distribute their milk, is the proper term, through a cow share program. The raw milk, which is really the only way you can legally do that in Virginia. But they process it, homogenize, pasteurize it through Old Church, and Old Church bottles it up into a 100% grass-fed product, which is available in stores and used at quite a few restaurants around
just,
the area.
Just really an aside, you mentioned the grass-fed 100%, which, of course, is the only way to raise any cattle because that's what they're designed to eat is grass. I had a dairy farmer who, to make sure that her cows came in at a certain time of day for milking, she would give them each a small handful of corn. And I asked her, well, why? And she said, well, first off, that's not enough to give them acidosis or anything, make them sick. It's pure sugar. Mm. And so if we think about that, if you were to feed your kids pure sugar, I don't think they'd live very long, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you don't do it with cows as well. It's just, but it's just enough to make sure they get there when you know when she wanted them in. I thought that was rather ingenious.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so our discussion here with Ben, hopefully shortly, it segues from the two previous interviews you did down at the City Market this mm-hmm. morning. Working backwards, talking to John Whiteside, he did mention the challenge that we have with young farmers needing to buy land and. You know, it can be very difficult. And Ben, we can maybe Ben can tell us a little bit about how he and his wife started their farm. But mm-hmm. my understanding is that they were able to buy their land. It wasn't just handed to them on a silver platter. It was they worked and they apprenticed and interned at other farms, including Polyface Farm, Joel Salatin's nearby, and were able to start their farm. So really great story there, number one. And number two, working back to the discussion about gut bacteria and kombucha, and that was such a super, super discussion about that very topic. And dairy is a culprit, a prime culprit in a lot of the dysfunction that we as a society suffer from in terms of the struggles we have with autoimmune disease and
yes.
the poor gut bacteria profile. And dairy, modern dairy with its, oh boy, all sorts of, you know, hormones that have been used and just the processing of dairy. I mean, there are certainly some people who say we shouldn't be consuming dairy at all. That dairy's, you know, that cow's milk is for baby cows.
Yeah, it's inflammatory, right.
And I think there's something to be said for that. But I'm personally a believer in you know, really embracing all foods when they are produced the right way.
The right way.
So I think, you know, when you are looking at a farm like Creambrook Farm and the kind of dairy they produce, that's just, we're not even talking in the same realm as industrial dairy, so it's a totally different story.
Well, it is, and even that article that we saw about Ben and Jerry's, 10 out of 11 samples contain glyphosate,
yeah.
which is Roundup, and yeah, just what I wanted in my dairy, you know, and then this is a symptom of exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the industrial dairy model is, it's the backbone of it is a commodity crop system of corn and soy and all sorts of crops that are grown genetically modified with a high regimen of pesticides and herbicides,
yep.
and those show up one way or another in the food,
the antibiotics. We have these super bugs that are now immune to a lot of the antibiotics because of the antibiotic residue in the food, and that is what is going on right now.
Yeah, we're just trying to get Ben to call in
here.
We're just working it out.
284-9470.
Bear with us here. And I do want to mention...
Ask him for his number. We're going to just call Ben.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
There's a great book that was published by a local author, actually. She does a great job of... she does a great job of explaining the whole... dairy thing, the RBGH, which is the synthetic genetically engineered hormone that's in dairy as a way to prevent all the diseases that cows suffer from as being in confinement. And so her name is Sina McCullough, and her book was Hands Off My Food. So if anybody's more interested in this topic, she devotes a chapter to the dairy, industrial dairy industry, among other things. But it's a wonderful book, and she is a PhD in nutritional science, and she's lives in Richmond, I believe, or down in the Richmond area. And this is a great book, Hands Off My Food.
Yeah, we're going to try to get you on the air here. How's that?
That's good.
Yeah.
Ben?
I can hear you, but it sounds like you're in the end of a tunnel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear us?
Barely.
Barely, okay.
Barely, huh? All right. How's that? Can we hear you? That's the question.
Yeah.
Okay, we're on. All right. Go ahead.
Great. All right. Well, I hopefully you can hear us enough, Ben. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in. This is Michael, and I'm with it's basically Mike and Mike here. I talked a little bit about your farm, and hopefully did an adequate enough job of introducing what you and Kristen do. We were talking about the dairy industry and how your farm and what you do out there is so far removed from what people typically think of in terms of dairy, and just really unbelievable operation. And so if you would, why don't you tell our audience a little bit from your words about your farm and what you do, and all about what makes you really so distinctive in this age of modern industrial dairy.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. So my wife Kristen and I own a farm in Middlebrook, Virginia. It's about 20 minutes southwest of Stanton. We have a 100% grass-fed dairy. What that means is the cows are fed only forage, so they aren't fed corn silage or soybeans or grain of any sort, any kind of starchy feeds, which really gives the milk a very unique, full flavor, and also it allows the cows to function as they were designed to. Cows are herbivores. They've got the four-chamber stomach, so they can handle rough feed, grasses, et cetera, very, very efficiently. We do not get the same milk production as those who feed grain, but our primary focus with our farm is to produce the highest quality milk possible, and then also, obviously stewardship of the land. We're trying to improve our natural grassland, what we have here on the farm, through your natural cycles, and the cows are a big part of that for us. So for us, it's very much a focus on our grass, and then, a focus on our cows, focusing on all the different kind of qualities you might have, whether it's cleanliness or components, butterfat, protein, et cetera, and just really trying to be as superb as we possibly can when it comes from a quality standpoint towards the milk we produce.
Oh, boy, that's great. What is the name of your farm again?
Pardon?
Creambrook Farm.
Oh, Creambrook Farm.
Creambrook Farm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so now, Ben, you explain to the audience how you have raw milk shares on the one hand, and you also do send your milk off. You collaborate both with, of course, Old Church Creamery, and also, I understand, Caramount Farm here in the Charlottesville area.
Oh, Gail's operation down there in Buckingham.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, we were trying to work with Caramont. The way we were trying to haul the milk to them was killed by the regulators, unfortunately.
that's just what we'd love to hear. Those are the kind of things that drive us crazy.
Man, oh, man. Yeah, let's keep that good stuff away from the people.
Yeah, so we do have the raw milk herd shares. That takes the vast majority of my wife and I's non-farming time. We focus primarily on the Shenandoah Valley, Central Virginia, and we also have some herd shares out in the Richmond area. But we're really just trying to focus on getting the highest quality milk possible to our members. We spend a lot of time focusing on cleanliness. Obviously, with raw milk, people get all excited when you start talking about raw milk because of the potential hazards, and they are correct. There are potential hazards to drinking raw milk. So we try to take the extra necessary steps to make sure the milk is perfectly clean. We have our own on-farm lab, so we're testing all of our milk before it leaves to make sure it's well below any suggested levels as far as cleanliness goes. Virginia does not have raw milk standards, but I got the opportunity to operate one of the largest raw milk dairies in Pennsylvania a couple years back, and we just pretty much duplicated the standards Pennsylvania has and how we're operating our farm. And then also we're working with Kristen's parents, Keith and Catherine Long, are the owners of Old Church Creamery in Mechanicsville, Virginia, just east of Richmond. And we're working with them, supplying them their 100% grass milk for their yogurts, kefirs, chocolate milks, and then also whole milk and some other probiotic-based products. So that's kind of where our market shed is right now. It's just we're very much a direct-to-the-consumer farm. We spent a lot of time, you know, interacting with the public and working as hard as we can to try to get the best milk possible to people.
That's great. Ben, this is MC. What, how can people access your milk shares and all that if they were interested here in Charlottesville?
Yes. So you have to purchase a herd share. That's the only legal method to do it in the state of Virginia right now. Basically, it's the same as if you were to purchase a share in like Google or Apple or something like that on the stock market. You buy a share of the herd, so you're a part owner. And that meets the legal requirement that you are a part owner of the herd, so technically you're getting milk from your own herd, same as if you would get dividends like from a, you know, a corporation on S&P 500 or something
right.
like that. And then based on the amount of ownership you have determines how much milk you get every week. So one share is the equivalent of 1 gallon, three shares the equivalent of 3 gallons, so forth and so on. So people make a one-time purchase fee that lasts the life of their membership. And then how we get paid is for boarding and delivering your share of the herd. So we're actually more legally, we are more in the service business than we are actually in the dairy business. But, I mean, it's a paper deal in all fairness. So so we have two drop points in Charlottesville, one over in Crozet and one down in Palmyra, where we're currently dropping milk off for our members every week, and then they can pick it up and enjoy it.
So what, how would they access it? Would that be creambrookfarm.com or?
Yes, so we can be found very easily at Creambrook Farm, which is CREAMBROOK farm.com. We're also very active on Facebook and Instagram. So if people want to see what the farm looks like, what the cows look like, what our milk looks like, what we look like, you know, what we're doing, we do that. We do have events from time to time at the farm. So people can have an opportunity to come out and see the cows and pet the baby calves. We've kind of wrapped those all up to the year thus far, but we are planning on doing several next year. So, but that's kind of how it's set up.
That is cool. Have you hooked in with any schools?
We've had that conversation. I mean, my wife and I do everything. We're very much a mom and pop operation, and we got two small kids. So there's kind of that work-life balance, or at least an attempt at it. So we've discussed doing educational things. It's on our radar, but we don't have anything planned at the current moment.
Ben, one last question. We had a previous guest on who talked about you know, sort of the future of food and the challenge that mm-hmm. we have for those who are interested and passionate about farming, sustainable farming, in terms of being able to buy land and purchase land and start farms. And my understanding
yep.
is that you and your wife were able to do just that. If you'd maybe spend a few minutes, if you will, just kind of explain to our audience, you know, how did you start your farm, and you know, how did that all come about for you?
But first, I wanted to remind the listeners, they're listening to WPVC. To Your Health is the program, Saturday mornings 11 to 12. With MC Blair and Michael Riley, and also it's at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You're on, Ben.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's a long story over 10 years. I'll try to condense it very rapidly here. I grew up in Maryland, left Maryland in 2007, went to Polyface Farms, and was an apprentice there. And for me, really, it was just getting into farming. I had no idea what I was going to do, what my enterprise would be. And then through multiple years of just gaining experience and trying different things, I kind of found that dairy was my best fit. My talents kind of went along those lines. I was really passionate about working with dairy cows. I love managing grass, et cetera. So I really began focusing exclusively on dairy about 4 or 5 years ago. About the time my wife and I got married, and she came back from a dairy background and, you know, obviously had interest in it too. So we kind of, you know, made it our family goal that, you know, we wanted to be in the dairy, and somehow in the dairy business in some capacity. So, we weren't really sure how that would be or how it would work, but we just set that goal and we took, you know, whatever jobs we could get working in dairy to gain the necessary experiences we need. And, you know, it was a big investment for us. I mean, we will have been married 6 years here in January, and we've moved every year we've been married. So, you know, it's a big commitment to, you know, go out there and just you know, kind of say, what do I need to know to make this happen? And about 3 years ago, we set the goal that, you know, if we're going to do this for the rest of our lives, it just, you know, makes sense for us to see if we can't buy land instead of kind of being stuck in these continual rental agreements that are so short term and, you know, really make it hard to plan for you as a family and as a business how you're going to operate when you have to, you know, possibly see your land base rotate around every 4 or 5 years. So we started, you know, once we kind of made land ownership one of our major goals, it really was a good thing for us because it gave us a very concentrated goal that we ran all of our decisions through from then on, as far as like, okay, are we actually taking a step to work towards our goals in being in dairy and also towards land ownership? And you know, when it comes to the 100% grass and some of those other things, I mean, that's very much been a passion of mine since the start. We knew we wanted to do a 100% grass dairy. We weren't sure what the market base would be. You know, there's a potential for organic and some other options. So, kind of, you know, long story short, we ended up finding this farm here in Middlebrook. We were able to put a deal together with Iroquois Valley Farms, which is a farm investment group out of Chicago that invests in younger generation folks to help them get started, because most agricultural banks right now aren't too fond of investing in risky agricultural things right now, because agriculture as a whole is kind of struggling right now. So through our collaboration with the Iroquois Valley Farms, we were able to purchase this farm here in Middlebrook and, you know, kind of put a focus towards, you know, 100% grass. We are certifying the farm towards organic, even though for me it's much more important to have that farm-to-consumer relationship. The organic label is a little more of a fallback for us, you know, if we weren't able to make it work, you know, retail-wise.
Right.
You know, there's always potential with Organic Valley or somebody like that. So,
yeah, exactly.
But that was, you know, like I said, it's a 10-year story, so that's the very condensed
that's
version
great.
Of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, thank you. That was fantastic. Yeah. It was really good for people to hear, to understand that, on the one hand, it is certainly very challenging, and you and Kristen have certainly endured. I know a lot of I'm sure you've had to have quite a bit of faith through that process, so, you know, kudos to you. And but it's certainly a testament to the fact that it can be done, so thank you so much.
And we were talking with Ben Beitzler of Creambrook Farm. Can be reached at creambrookfarm.com or on Facebook or Instagram. And it's a 100% grass-fed dairy. It's doing things the right way. We really appreciate
Thanks,
that, Ben. Thank
yeah.
you
Thank
so much.
Thank you so much,
much
for coming on.
All right.
Have
All
a
right.
great day.
Hey, bye.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
All right. Man, I'll tell you what. Full of information for sure.
Yeah.
Makes me want to go hopefully get up with some ice cream company or just make your own, you know, with that wonderful
Absolutely.
Milk.
Yeah.
And get a raw milk share. And yeah. I understand that.
It's such a, you know, that's a topic we could probably delve into some other day. And when
yes.
you look at the raw milk and, you know, just, having been to their farm, oh boy, I'd eat my breakfast off the floor of their little milking shed.
Wow.
There, it's so pristine and clean, and you know, it really, again, it's just a shame. And this extends to all local farms where there's so much care put into their product, and you know, and yet, you know, we have this paranoia out there about the health and cleanliness of food, because, you know, on the one hand, our industrial food system is really phenomenal in terms of what it does to protect our food supply and keep it safe and clean, but a lot of that is necessary because of how frankly gross it is.
Dairy, absolutely.
Again, dairy is a prime example. I mean I've been to some dairies where it's gross. I mean, it really is.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And they have to, you know, take these steps with all these different antibiotics or whatever it is to, you know, protect the cleanliness. And then, you know, so it's really, again, it's a pretty complicated topic, one we'd
is.
Have to
it
delve
is.
Into
but we're going to take another break here, and actually Michael has to get going, got some family things going on. Really appreciate you being here, Michael.
Thank you, MC. Great
Absolutely.
To be here.
And I think we've got a good team going on. Michael will be
Without
my co-host
doubt, yeah.
from this point on. And we will take a little break, and we'll be back. And we are back. This is MC Blair right here, and my co-host, Michael Riley had to step out and do some family obligations, but that's part of being healthy, right? Absolutely. Hey, I wanted to say something about a woman that I have been following for quite some time, Alice Waters. She's been a catalyst for food justice, and she's shown why we have to avoid the fake food that the factory farm model offers. And the reason, of course, and we've said this before, it not only contains those toxic chemicals, but some of the processed products made from these ingredients leach nutrients from our bodies. Let's look at that again. So you think you're getting nutrients from whatever processed food you're eating, and in fact, you're not only not getting nutrients, it's leaching whatever nutrients are in your bodies. You think that might make you sick, or at least have you to where you're prone to getting sick. Your immune system gets lowered, and we have all sorts of things that can creep into our bodies, especially from that factory food system. So the commitment to food justice, which, of course, is good food, honestly grown, picked at the height of its season, prepared simply, served beautifully, eaten slowly and convivially. It's not what you eat, it's how you eat, with people, with meditation slash prayer, whatever is your model for giving thanks, and should be available to everyone regardless of income or lack thereof. That's what we were talking about with John Whiteside, the local farmers committing to making sure that people get food access regardless of means. Doesn't matter. And the ones that are, you know, have more, they'll pay more, and they're happy to help their neighbors. But that's how it has to be. The other thing I asked him about, I said, John, I said, how can we get, like, produce all year long? And he said, you got to eat what's in season. And there are plenty of winter squashes and all that sort of thing. Sweet potatoes are usually available most of the year. And so there's a way we can do this without putting up elaborate greenhouses so that we can have tropical fruit here. You know, people, if you're not in a place where pineapples grow, you probably shouldn't eat pineapples. I know that's tough. I like pineapples, so it's hard to do it. It is a commitment, a total commitment. And we have to recognize and support those people who produce and sell it, the farmers, the fishermen, the ranchers, the local growers. Farmers markets, like the city market, like the farmers market in Afton, they have farmers market at on the middle of the week at Mead Avenue, I believe, and then they have it at Forest Lakes, and there are several. Just look it up and support community-supported agriculture. That's the one where you buy a share of a farm, and you get a box of food every week delivered to a drop-off area, and you just simply go pick it up. It's there, and you know, you can find out what's in there, what's going to be in there a couple days ahead of time, so you can do your menu planning. And you just have to understand the concept of flavor and sustenance and the sensual humanity of the table. And you know, that is so true. So true. You get some friends and family around, and you give thanks to the farmers that produce that food. It's a whole different experience, and just a wonderful experience. Farmers markets, they're everywhere. The organics are widely available. Just be careful. You know, the factory farm model has gotten into the organic industry as well, and unfortunately, a lot of that is, they've changed the organic rules through legislation to fit the big corporations. But Alice found a foundation, the Chez Panisse Foundation, in 1995 as a way to create and sustain organic garden and landscape that's wholly integrated into a school's curriculum. And she started this project called Edible Schoolyard Project. It exists now in 33 countries. That's pretty good, isn't it? It's the program here in Charlottesville was assisted by Alice Waters, and it was modeled after her edible schoolyards. It's called City Schoolyard Gardens. Wonderful, wonderful program. It's taking those kids and training them, showing them what real food looks like, how to raise it, you know, and how to prepare it. It's just a great, great program. And let's face it, folks, if you can get young people interested, and by the way, once you get young people around a farmer and they're talking and the, you know, they got a little animals there, whatever, and you're at the farm, they do get interested in that. And they, oh my goodness, this is great, right? And so that was modeled after her edible schoolyard, City Schoolyard Gardens. And we had them on here, and we will have them back as time goes on. Now, I mentioned earlier when we were talking to Ben at Creambrook Farm about Ben and Jerry's ice cream having glyphosate, and unfortunately, it's true. The herbicide, it's the main ingredient in Roundup, and it's widely used in agriculture. That's factory farm agriculture. But few brands on that list are startling. Ben and Jerry's, the Vermont ice cream company known for its family-friendly image and environmental advocacy. Of course, it was purchased by Unilever many years back, and I could probably just say, that's enough said, right? Now, the global director for Ben and Jerry's said the company was working to ensure that all the ingredients in its supply chain come from sources that do not include GMOs or the glyphosate used. So they were alerted to that, and they have responded. So way to go, guys. Even the big companies are able to do this as long as they realize the harm that can happen from ingesting pesticide residue, antibiotic residue, herbicide residue. It can actually really, really does affect us, and it keeps to make us sick. They say we're working to transition away from GMOs as far as we can get. But then these tests come along, and we need to do better. We need to understand more. And so that's exactly what's going on there. And then another real quick note here, KFC moved to Ghana a while back, and since coming there, type 2 diabetes and obesity has skyrocketed. Unbelievable, right? Well, think about that. So they've got to take some responsibility for that, making people sick, right? Unbelievable. Well, we are just about going to wrap it up here at To Your Health. Had a great time today talking with Ben of Creambrook Farm, and also, of course, my new co-host, Michael Riley. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening.